What would you think?
Is that
Would you
really
take
on?
anything at all? You probably wouldn't.
Okay.
Just
Okay.
think about
He's going away. Shane's
if you're
going
sitting
away.
on a tree, watching the Battle of Bull Run. Shane, I gave you some
Shane's
tribute.
gone.
Oh. Screw you, Shane.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. We are here tonight to discuss the final recap for 2017. We're going to talk about TV this time instead of movies, though. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Blair Settner.
Hello.
And Drew Landry.
One more time.
Blair, it's been a while since you've been on the podcast. Presumably, you have been just like fine-tuning your critical muscles in that time period. You've been reading a lot of like Pauline Kael and Roger Ebert and all those kind of guys. We're going to really get into it as far as just the nuances of these various TV series. Mm-hmm. What'd you think about Mindhunter?
Loved it.
Anything else?
First of all, it's Mindhunters.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I imagine Jonathan Groff on a motorcycle, flitting in between cities, chasing serial killers.
Nailed it.
Okay, Mindhunters. Sounds like a great show. A wee kid, Blair. But, you know, in any given year, there are dozens upon dozens of TV shows to talk about. And if we wanted to get through all of them, it would be the maximum amount of time we could spend on each various series. What'd you think of X? I loved it. What'd you think of Y? It was okay. And then just keep on moving down the list. But we're going to try and narrow our focus like we did with the movie podcasts and just talk about a few series that we enjoyed or were slightly disappointed by. So Short and Sweet is something that is not generally associated with this podcast, but we'll see how it goes. For Best Returning Series, I'm going to kick it off and say that I love The Americans. It's a cold, chilly, sad, depressing show. But it is all of those things because I've been watching it through five seasons now, and the cumulative power of it is just crushing and devastating. And you come away from it just wanting to slit your wrist, not unlike a character did on the show this year. But all the same, it's just so well done and well plotted and well acted. And for those who haven't watched it, it's a show about – it's a show set in the 80s starring Matthew Rhys and Kerry Russell. They play a couple of deep cover spies for the Soviet Union in 80s America. And it's never been more apparent that they are on the wrong side of history than it is in this season. They've killed a lot of innocent people. They killed some more innocent people this year, tore apart some families, drove some people to near suicide. And you can just see all of this on their faces and what it's like to live in a corrupt cycle that you have no way to get out of. It is bleak, but it's just so well done. So well done. I can't stress it enough. I mean, I totally understand why people don't watch the show and can't get excited for it because, again, it makes you want to kill yourself. But still, it's just so I really enjoyed this season. I just found myself getting blown away after episode after episode. They drag their teenage daughter into it just further and further. And she has a conversation with her parents about how she's pretty sure she's never going to be able to feel love anymore.
Oh, man.
And they put all their effort into the sun. Great show. Great show. Not necessarily the most fun show on TV, but one of the highest quality, no question. Blair, you tried to watch.
I tried to watch. I was on maternity leave, so.
The first season.
Yeah.
Wait, okay. Yes.
And I made it like 3 or 4 episodes in, and it just didn't grab me.
Sure. It's a dense show, very subtle. You really got to pay attention. And the payoffs take a very long time, like years, as far as show time is concerned. So I get it. It's not an easy show to get into, but it is one that rewards viewers after, because you just get so connected to the characters and are able to see everything on their faces. And they're master spies. Like, they're able to hide their emotions.
But what you were mentioning there about the spy life, I mean, you know, I wish I could tell you, but...
Sure, because you're a spy, and we're going to blow your cover.
Yeah, I can't go into any...
Maybe, a la The Americans, you'll get a bullet in the back of a head in a cold, dank dungeon.
You see?
Great.
Sure.
Just laugh a minute. Speaking of laughs a minute, Blair, what's your favorite, one of your favorite returning series from this last year?
So a series that needs no year upon year for instant gratification is Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I love the Netflix series, and it's the second season?
Third. Yes. Yeah.
Third season. Yeah. Second season was with the
drunk Tina Fey therapist. That's is right. What I remember most from that.
Yeah.
Third season, Titus Lemonaded.
Yes. Which is fantastic.
And I mean, you're exactly right about like not keeping up with show continuity. Like, I don't remember why Tilda Swinton was painted on the back of the truck, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter because the joke.
It's great.
Who Tilda Swinton on the back of their truck. I'm surprised it isn't sweeping the nation.
It's great. It's lighthearted. It's funny. It takes no brain power. And that's where I'm at right now.
I couldn't really tell you what happened in this last season. She went to college.
She goes to college for a little bit. And she's a rower. Okay. She's like a fantastic rower because
she turned the crank for the pastor.
Oh, man.
The pastor's going to get married to another woman. She thwarts that. But not a whole lot of plot stuff. It just is fun. There are little bits and pieces here and there.
Joke dense show in the 30 Rock vein where a lot of stuff keeps coming. I really don't think she was like as much at the focus of the series as she was this year. Her landlord. She got a lot of screen time. I don't know if that was a great choice
she's
or not.
All right. Her voice is terrible.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really liked last season. Probably a little more than this one, the second versus the third.
Yeah.
Because, once you get, a couple inches below the surface on Kimmy Schmidt, it's a dark premise and show.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But it's like Ellie Kemper's just sunny disposition is keeping that buried beneath the surface.
Yeah.
And I think it came out just the right amount in the second season, whereas I feel like it barely came up at all in this last year. Like, she's more or less just trying to put her life back together and go through the steps that a person is supposed to go through.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of feel like that's the most potent part of Kimmy Schmidt, because you got to have a little bit of, the Simpsons rule is 95-98% nonsense and 2% pathos or sadness or whatever. That's a good ratio.
Yeah.
And Titus Lemonaded the season. So it's 99.5% silly.
Yeah.
Drew, what's your favorite returning series?
Yeah, I have to tell you, it's got to be the Game of Thrones.
I didn't think you watched it.
Okay. I haven't yet. And you might say, well, why in the heck are you even saying this?
Yes.
I totally
Let's just
understand.
Pretend I said that.
Here's why that I'm bringing this up. All the stuff, it gets so much hype. And it comes back, and it has this mass following. And it's like, people tune into this thing. They get upset if someone even says anything, spoils a little bit about it. It's got this tremendous story to it. I can't think of anything else that has this kind of impact upon people that is so influential to them in the past year or so. The MMC has its own podcast over Game of Thrones. And people, you all really do care about what goes on that show. So, there's no podcast for the Americans. There's no podcast for, there's this big following here. And so that's my thing for it. Just the influence that it has upon everybody around it. I don't know if there's anything bigger than that. So that's why.
But you don't watch it.
I fail to see why that's relevant.
Because we're talking about our favorite returning series. If you want to talk about critical favorites, like The Leftovers is universally the highest critically approved show on television. But I don't watch it, so we're not talking about it. And Blair doesn't watch it.
Don't watch it. I didn't realize that it had got
people
so
love it. Yes, critics really? Critics are nuts for it.
My thing is that I've seen a handful of episodes. It's something that I watch continually since I don't have. It's just that I'm not a big avid fan, but it's something that you just can't ignore.
Well, there's popularity and there's quality, and very often those two things have nothing to do with each other.
So are you suggesting that Game of Thrones is a bad TV show?
I think this season it kind of was.
Segway.
Then there's stuff on CBS like Big Bang Theory and all those CSI spinoffs and the aforementioned NCIS. And those are extremely popular. Like, those have high ratings, but nobody gives a shit because it's like universally recognized that they're just not good. And people that watch those shows are in like the demographic of 50 plus. So they don't, they don't connect with critics. They don't connect with fandom.
What are the age range of the critics?
I don't know, probably like
50 plus
30 to 50 in that range, I would imagine.
So they're kind of in the demographics that they're writing about.
I mean, kind of, but
okay, so
even, but there's all, especially now there's so much TV on the air that you don't have to watch NCIS. Like, it, you don't have to watch something just because it's on, because there's always something else on. But
so they're competing, but they're still on television. So
okay. So the point is that Drew doesn't want to praise an idiosyncratic show that he likes to watch.
Well, I will say this. I mean, the show that that is very contentious within the Mediocre Movie Club is The Big Bang Theory, and I find it to be heavily successful. It's got some very good lines. I find, there's humor in the fact that there's this one guy who gets no kind of sarcasm, doesn't understand it at all. These are all very smart people. This ongoing thing where the nerd is trying to get beauty girl, and they end up getting them, and I don't know how far else they can go. That's my key criticism, is that they're starting families, and now it's like, what's next? They have to end this show sometime. But people like to watch it. It's popular. People, there's apparently it works for CBS. It works for them.
Big Bang Theory. If it gives people joy, I would hate to take that joy away from them. But their joy equals like a big cartoon question mark over my head because I don't understand it. I don't think I could sit through 5 minutes of Big Bang Theory without gouging my eyes out with a sharp hot needle. But I mean, that's just me. Whatever makes other people happy. And God, even after going through that torture, I was still have to listen to that laugh track. So the point is, it sounds like torture. But
okay.
But moving on to disappointing series, since we're on kind of like a negative swing here. Drew, why don't you keep on going and talk about a series that disappointed you this year?
Okay, yeah, I've seen a handful of episodes of this, and, I don't understand why Girls was a popular show. I gave it a shot this year. I just didn't get it. Watching it throughout, I still didn't get it. I kept giving it this opportunity, and, I never understood how people got on. It's like you watching The Big Bang Theory, this big question mark going, what? So anyway, but I kept coming back to it. So I was incredibly disappointed by this series. I'm glad it's not coming back. Lena Dunham has really turned into the worst.
People would say that she's arguably always been the worst.
I will agree with that. I will not argue with that point whatsoever. She's not, I don't find her talented.
I have seen the whole series, followed it pretty intensely for whatever it was on, like looking for, like if it showed up on my DVR, it was the first thing I watched. This last season, I would agree, was a disappointment just because it's premised on the idea that this person that we've spent a lot of seasons with, who has demonstrated not a lot of personal growth, is now wanting to be a mother and is able to do so by the end of the series. And I was very far away from buying that after all that I had seen her complain about and all of that. I mean, I do still like the show. It was certainly a show that like deserved to exist, especially in like an indie framework where there are many, many, many movies that are exactly like Girls, in which a young person is trying to figure their shit out. There have been plenty of television series like that as well. It's just her specific twist on that, and it being the time that it's in, the intense narcissism of that kind of person. And yes, it was a difficult series to watch on occasion, but it had moments of like sheer brilliance. I would absolutely argue just not so many in this last season.
I gotta think it should have been canceled after the first season.
Fair enough. Blair, your disappointing series?
Yeah, I was given the recommendation of Good Girls Revolt. And so, again, on maternity leave, I spent a good chunk of time on the couch with the baby watching the TV. And this series was only one season because it was absolutely terrible. The characters made decisions that were inconsistent throughout.
What is Good Girls Revolt?
Okay, I think they tried to take like Mad Men style. It's like set in the late 60s, mm-hmm. 70s, and these women are at a magazine. They are underwriters, basically, so their names never get printed, but they do all the research and write, but the men in the magazine get all the credit. And so they're vying for a spot to write. But it comes across as like the women don't actually have, like they make decisions where they are not in power. Like one of the main characters ends up sleeping with her boss. Like
they're written as...
It's written from, yes.
As the negative female stereotypes, yes, that warrant keeping them as secretaries.
Yes.
Okay.
It just was infuriating. And she had a fine relationship with somebody else in the series, and then it just like goes poorly. And it's just, nothing was developed. I hated it. I thought it was just terrible.
Did you get all the way through it?
I did. Suffered through it. And I, every day I did it, I would be like, why am I doing this to myself for another hour? But I just gutted it out.
We've all been there. I mean, these streaming series, if like a week went by and you had like time to think about the things that you could have been doing instead of watching the show. But if they're just, I'm sitting here, I'm comfortable.
Yeah. I have a baby in my arms.
Sure, whatever. I'm not going to do anything, and another piece of shit's going to land up on the TV screen.
Yep.
I totally get it. Mm-hmm. There are so many of those like Mad Men ripoffs, and they haven't been able to figure it out. Someone that should have been able to figure out the adaptation of a pretty seminal like fantasy book is Brian Fuller, who previously worked on Hannibal, which is one of my favorite shows of the last like 10 years, I'd say, like post HBO, Golden Age, Sopranos, Deadwood, The Wire. Hannibal got away with some crazy shit on network TV at 10 o'clock at night. And the creator, Brian Fuller, then went to Starz for his next project to do American Gods, which is an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's book. And Starz being a premium channel would have allowed him to go even crazier. And I recently knocked out all of this series, and it's disappointing to stick with the theme of this category. I had very high hopes. Like, it's about each wave of immigrants that has come to America brings their gods with them. And just people believing in gods makes the gods real. So a representation of Odin is walking around in the world, and there are dozens of Jesuses at one point because everyone has a different incarnation of Jesus in their head. And because Easter is celebrated, the goddess of Easter is around, Ostara of the Dawn. And there are all kinds of very niche old gods from like Assyria and Egypt that have made their way over. But at the same time, they're in conflict with the new gods of a secular society, like the Mr. World, the god of globalization, and the god of media, and the technology boy. it's crazy. There's a lot of stuff happening. So many great ideas in this show, but it chooses to spend a lot of time with a character that Odin, played by Ian McShane, of all people, who is consistently awesome, Al Swearengen, mm-hmm. Deadwood. Mm-hmm. In the pilot, he picks up a man as like a henchman, and this man is both an audience surrogate, and he's also given a serious arc that takes away from the antics of the gods and this coming war between the old gods and the new and the new secular gods. And who gives a shit? Like it's 8 episodes long, and I could barely get through one episode that was just like the henchman's backstory. I fell asleep twice. And
oh, no.
Brian Fuller, his mind is so weird and so crazy, and the shit he came up with could only have come from him, but he's just not operating on that high of a level with American Gods, and I don't think it's going to show up for a second season. Like, there are great parts of it, and I want to know what happens. I kind of want to read this book now, but I don't care about his zombie wife, the henchman's zombie wife. I don't care about the henchman. Especially in contrast with Peter Stormare holding a giant bloody hammer, but he's an old Russian dude in an apartment. It's just so strange and weird. Chuck all this strange and weird stuff aside for like a failed casino heist. Who gives a shit? Very frustrating. I wanted to love it. And I love parts of it. I loved Ian. Yeah. I mean, Ian McShane is fantastic in everything he does. He doesn't work enough. I mean, I think a lot of people saw this. If we had Bobby with us, I feel like he might have seen it because I know that he read this book and he's a big Neil Gaiman fan. But alas, sad, disappointing. But best new series. Blair, why don't you kick us off with this one?
I'm obsessed with Big Mouth. I think it's fantastic. And would recommend it to anybody who has a good sense of humor and doesn't mind a little raunch. It is a Netflix show, it's a cartoon, and it is about puberty. So it's a sixth grade setting. The characters are all going through puberty at different times in their life, and puberty manifests itself as a monster. And the woman monster is Maya Rudolph, and the puberty monster in the men is
Nick Kroll, who does many voices in the show, indistinguishable one character to another, I think.
As someone who works with teenagers, it is so spot on for the dumb decisions that they make and irrational thought processes and stuff.
And as we see in Big Mouth, those are the best case scenarios.
Oh,
your average irrational decision has risen to the top of the pyramid on top of a lot of like homicidal, grotesque decisions that could have been made in their place that they probably had the idea of.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think if you have any respect for teenagers, that this is a great series for you.
Really flew under the radar. I feel like everybody should have been talking about this show for a solid month.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. I haven't settled on how I'm going to rank TV shows from this last year just yet. I can confidently say that Big Mouth is going to be in my top three, and it's got a solid shot at being like my favorite TV show of the year, alongside previous best TV shows of the year like Veep from last year and Cosmos from a couple of years ago, whenever that came out, with Neil deGrasse Tyson. So it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. It is disgusting and raunchy, as Blair said, but it loves its characters. It wants the best things.
Yeah.
It wants only the best things for them, but it places real and understandable obstacles in front of them. And I mean, not only are they battling like the physical aspect and the emotional aspect, Peter, but they're also figuring out, as all children must, that nobody around them knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Everybody's a fucking moron.
And that their parents, make mistakes and are human.
Like it's evenly split, I think, between genders. I think if it was just boys and spoo dregs and lentil soup, then it wouldn't have worked. But because
I don't get the lentil soup.
No. You warm up two bags of lentil soup and you put them in the pillow and then you do your business and then you eat the soup.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Have you not seen this, Drew?
Haven't, but I understand the lentil soup reference.
Okay, you have to watch it.
It's sensational. It's a fantastic show. It's just the voice cast is so deep.
It's so good.
Kristen Bell at one point plays the aforementioned pillow.
Oh my God.
John Hamm plays a scallop. Great. It's got a big heart. I don't know why it's called Big Mouth. I have no sense of it.
The main character's got a big mouth. That was like mentioned once. He's got a big mouth.
Yes, but like, I don't know. Maybe Nick Kroll was made fun of for having a big mouth.
Yeah.
When he was a kid. I don't know. Whatever. It's not a great title, but it's a great show. Another fantastic show, and one that's going to be highly ranked on my top 20 TV series for 2017 is The Young Pope. And something that I figured out about what I like this year, maybe it's just been, I don't know, the mood I've been in over this last year. Like, my favorite movie is Raw, which is about cannibalism in a French college. There's a lot of crazy shit in that movie. There's a lot of crazy shit in Big Mouth. There's a lot of crazy shit in The Young Pope. Apparently what I need is I need stuff to really surprise me and shock me with stuff I've never seen before. And The Young Pope does that. The Young Pope is an HBO series starring Jude Law as the titular pontiff. And it opens with him in a dream calling out from a giant pile of dead babies and then proceeds to get weirder from there.
Yeah.
The premise is brilliant. In the modern world, there is an ancient, medieval, nonsensical, outdated, hierarchical organization sitting smack dab in the middle of it that is full of these self-serious, ornate, unnecessary rituals and practices. And this show completely takes the piss out of them by treating them very seriously. Will the Pope wear his papal tiara today? Yes. And he will get dressed to "I'm Sexy and I Know It." Thank you very much. Will the Pope enjoy a kangaroo in his garden? Yes. Yes, I will. And it will lead to the greatest murder mystery on TV in 2017. Who killed the kangaroo? It kind of falls apart at the end a little bit. It has a ill thought through relationship between the church and, say, molestation victims. It's hard to do a satire about that, which I very much feel this show is at its heart, like making fun of the church while still having some level of respect for it.
And that's it certainly does still have respect for it. And
yeah, it has respect for its philosophical leanings, but like all the trappings of it, all of the said ornateness, it deems ridiculous and unnecessary and out of a completely different age that has no business in 2017. It in some instances is able to walk that line really well, but when they're trying to fold in like a blackmail plot between a pedophile priest and the Pope, not great. But it's on much firmer ground when the Pope is shooting mind bullets at a duplicitous nun.
Yeah. Praise her to death.
Yeah, he prays her to death. He makes her heart explode with Hail Marys.
Yeah. What's interesting is after, you know, HBO does these little, like, after the episode,
mm-hmm.
and the producer or direct, I don't know.
Showrunner.
He's talking about the series, but it doesn't sound like he sounds like he has so much respect for the Catholic Church.
It just doesn't come through in the show at all.
Then, so only thing I would say about that is that it sounds like he's trying to push the envelope with the blackmail, with the molestation, and he thinks that he goes really far with it by sending this dude to Antarctica.
What happens in the show is the pedophile priest is outplayed and exiled to an isolated corner of the world
where he can still do damage.
Yep, where he's more likely to get away with it.
Exactly. So that does not
occur to the show at all.
That's exactly right. That's my point. Yeah. It's like that I'm saying that I feel like the guy, I don't know, maybe it's not respect for the church, but he thinks that he's being like, hey, look at this. But
yes, he's enacting like a medieval punishment on this person when we don't live in a medieval world anymore.
Right.
It's not witty and fun that the Pope exiled a pedophile priest to an isolated area of the world. It's going to be cold there.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna complete this joke.
You don't have to.
So yes, and that is one of many like botched plot lines in The Young Pope. But I don't really care, just because it's so much fun to watch scene to scene. You just don't know what's gonna happen. And I really wanted it to go in one direction, where he was like a secret saboteur that was gonna bring the church down from the inside. It went a different way in the end, but I don't know. I think it's getting a second season. Unclear.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
But I would, especially based on how the first season ends. Like the series could be over, or it could be back.
Yeah.
It's a total coin flip. It's a Schrodinger's box of a TV series.
I would definitely watch it again.
Yes, 100%. It's weird as shit, but it's got a lot to recommend to it. We're gonna bring Joe Settner in here.
Hey.
So Joe, we are in the tail end here. So why don't you just rattle through your best returning series and a disappointing series, and then your best new series, and we'll interject as we go.
Yeah. So best returning series. I thought a lot about this, and I was really shocked what I came up with, and it ended up being Stranger Things. And the reason I went there was I thought season two was actually a lot better than season one. And at the end of the day, what it came down to was with Stranger Things is it's not a show you go in with expectations of, oh, this is going to be like edgy and kind of a psychological thriller. No, it's supposed to be fun. And I don't think any show captured how fun TV is supposed to be this year other than Stranger Things. From the music, from the characters, the kid who ended up being like the surrogate big brother.
Oh, Steve Harrington?
Yeah, he ended up was fantastic in the in this season. And then the kid who played Billy, I don't know how to pronounce him, but Daisy.
I don't either.
You know,
we all know who Billy is. No, oh yeah, unforgettable.
Creepy, just creepy. It was a fun show, and I thought it nailed the genre perfectly. So I haven't talked to anybody who hasn't enjoyed it for what it is, and I was impressed for what they had to offer for season two. I thought it easily could have fallen off.
We did, of course, do a Stranger Things podcast series about that. And myself and Megan and Bobby and Ashley, we were all positive on it. Although for slightly different reasons, like I think the first season was maybe more fun, whereas I thought maybe the second season got a little deeper.
I agree with that.
It added some pathos to the show that I like. It became a show that was fluffy and not really about anything to a show that was actually about something.
I do agree with that, but I don't think it lost its roots. I mean,
yeah, we divided the series into three parts. That middle section, which includes, like you mentioned, Steve Harrington and Dustin teaming up, and it includes Will having been possessed by whatever they called the monster, and him coming to terms with all that and figuring it out. And I thought that was easily the best stuff the show's ever done, and it really elevated the whole series for me.
Yeah, and you know, I loved the scene of them getting trapped in the RV or whatever it was. It was fun. I think Steve does a great job with it.
How about a series that disappointed you, Joe?
And I know this is the best returning series for Blair, but The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, it was awful. I loved the first season. I loved it.
Have you been on a steady decline since the first season?
Yeah, I loved the first two seasons. I thought the second season was just as good as the first. And then there was... All right, look. Is there going to be a lot of character development here?
Not necessarily.
Right. So I didn't expect there to be, but I didn't expect them to really dumb down every single character. And that's kind of what it was, from Titus to... Like, the whole shtick of Kimmy Schmidt being this naive girl because she was in a bunker, I get it. But now all of a sudden, every person around her is on her level, and at least that's what I felt like I was watching.
Like, its asset is probably how light it generally is, even though, like, just below the surface, it is about a person who was, like, abducted in a Brie Larson room style scenario for like half of her life. But it also stopped really being solely about her and really folded in the other characters. Like, there was Jacqueline stuff with the Redskins and her landlord running for alderman or whatever that was. I mean, Titus Lemonading, again, we'll single that out as a wonderful piece of cinema. But there were a lot of tangents in the series that didn't quite serve it very well.
And there was definitely some laugh out loud moments, like because the actors and actresses in the show are very funny. They are funny people, but like they just kind of kept driving the same joke over again. And they dumbed down the characters. They didn't need to be dumbed down. And you don't need character development in this show. Maybe I'm asking too much, but
I mean, they are dumb people.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times an episode does Titus talk about the time he mistook one thing for another thing?
Right. Exactly.
Season two also had like the college stuff, and I think there isn't a lot of mileage in like college satire, maybe because it's such low hanging fruit. Like, you just make them offended at something, and that's the joke. Or you make them entitled in some way, and that's the joke. And I don't remember. I don't really remember.
I love that she's a rower.
The rower stuff is funny. Yes, the rower stuff is funny, but that's about Kimmy. And they did spend a lot of time, like, making fun of, like, prep school.
Yeah, sure.
Prep school girls that come to college and think they know everything. Well, and, like, this is that's just a joke that's only going to take you so far. Like, you get one or two of them.
Oddly enough, I the rowing part really made me laugh because I literally had a cousin who, she was literally walking through campus one day and they asked her to join the rowing team. Like,
isn't that how Blake Simmons joined the Aces?
I mean, that's the only, that might be the only part of season, what was it, season three I could have related to. Are they doing a season four? I don't even know.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are.
And honestly, I will probably watch it. So it didn't scare me away completely, but I was disappointed. Maybe expectations were not really measured for the show. I'll say that.
And we'll give you a break and let Drew jump in with his best new series.
Hey, okay. Yeah. I got to tell you, you know, the one that really, I didn't expect too much from it, to be honest. I just, it just was such an interesting aspect was the fact that young Sheldon actually got likes from people who don't even like the, you know, the Big Bang Theory or anything like it. I mean, I remember.
What are their names? I'm sorry, Drew. We're skeptical. We've never seen, I can't speak for Joe. Joe, have you ever seen us like a second of young Sheldon?
No.
Okay. Sell us on it, Drew.
Okay. So anyway, well, like I was saying, you know, even Mediocre Movie Club member Phil said that this is better than what it deserves. And so he went into this with the idea that it really shouldn't be that good. And they're there to really not give it a very good rating, but they turn out to be that this is quirkily funny. The cast works well. It's well planned. It's pretty well done. And so you got to give some credit where it's due here. I mean, it's not on a laugh track. It's not on a taped in some live studio. It's, you know, done in a sitcom type way. Well, hold on, not like a sitcom, but it's done in a way that you wouldn't expect, like some stage and some audience and all that sort of stuff.
They could very easily have gone like the TGIF style format.
Yeah, they
kudos to them for not doing that.
Yeah,
like I watch a reasonable amount of like ABC half hour shows that are in the mold of that kind of thing.
Are they trying to go like comedy style, like Scrubs type of deal, or
what? No. Like subtly funny. You know, there. You know, this is like a kid like in the fourth or fifth grade,
like Wonder Years, right? Isn't it like Wonder Years?
That's a bit too serious. There's just a lot of subtle funny, you know, aspects going on here. It's not slapstick. It's kind of smart funny, and there's a lot of things that happen there. But you know, Wonder Years, but not nearly as serious as that. Like they're not tackling any kind of coming of age moment, because that's, you know, that show continues on with his life. It's just up to when he goes off to some genius, you know, college, you know, level. So I don't know what's next for this, because it's only in the elementary, and he's trying to figure out how to deal with his brother, how interact with other people, and how they are sarcastic. They are, but he doesn't get it, and so he'll take them literally for what they say, and he's just, that's the part of his brain that never really developed, I guess you could argue. But he's got this, I've been using this word a lot, and I don't know what other word to use. Is just subtle. And there's a lot of that kind of, you know, little pun, well, not pun, the little digs at other people that he'll use to kind of make a fun point. So, I mean, there's no, you know, laugh track. There's no stage. It's very much in a particular setting in East Texas. And he's got his family, he's got his brother and his sister, and they're all, you know, figuring out how to deal with this kid. And he's trying to figure out how to deal with others. And it's done in a pretty lighthearted way.
It
doesn't sound as torturous as The Big Bang Theory. But, so I'll give it that.
But to be fair to The Big Bang Theory, and I'm not a fan of the show at all. It's written pretty well for what it is. Like the jokes are good. the whole shtick is not for me, but they do well with the characters.
Joe, why don't you tell us about your best new series?
All right, so I really struggled trying to pick one between these two, and so I went ahead and put them both down. And I went with
so I threw my hands up and said, "Fuck it."
The hell with it. And I thought there. I make the rules up. I went with The Deuce and Mindhunter. HBO does Deuce. Mindhunter is Netflix, I believe. Both really, really gritty. The Deuce is a James Franco deal with Maggie Gyllenhaal. Oh. And it is basically about a guy trying to start up his own bar and getting tied in with basically the mafia. It's a David Simon show created by David Simon.
Mm-hmm. Of The Wire.
And it's fantastic. It really shows the relationship between pimps and their prostitutes. It doesn't really hold anything back. Have any of you watched it yet?
I have no reason to not have watched it. Like you said, it is a David Simon show. I've loved it. I really enjoyed to loved everything he's ever done. And I kind of feel like he's only gotten better since The Wire in some aspects.
It is a dirty, gritty show.
Sex trade in like the nadir of New York in the 70s.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I probably should have brought up
Taxi Driver New York.
Yeah, I should have brought that up. Is that it's 70s New York. It goes into the porn industry. It's early porn industry development. And then peep shows. It even involves a little bit of the gay scene going on in New York at the time as well. It includes a lot of this stuff that is for a long time underground and not really seen on television, which makes sense. And they do a great job of developing the characters. James Franco actually has two roles in it. He actually has he plays twin brothers, from the characters the pimps play to the really uncomfortable sex scenes. It is
fantastic. Short too, right? Like it's not, there's not a lot of episodes. Is that
eight episodes, maybe
seven or eight?
Okay. Yeah, and I know they're signed up for another episode season, I believe. But it's really, you cringe at times watching it.
I believe you. How about Mindhunter?
There's one guy in particular that I want to bring up, Cameron Britton, who plays a serial killer, Edmund, who should win all the awards. But basically, it is about the FBI's development of its psychological profiling division.
Behavioral science.
Yeah.
I was also a big fan of Mindhunters.
Yeah. Did you watch? Oh, great. Good. Yeah. Good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I loved it. And what do you think of the guy who played Edmund? Do you remember him?
Yeah, I think he's fantastic.
He should
be super creepy.
Totally creepy. Just the casualness that he talks about it blows you away. Because he's obviously a serial killer. The casual like approach that he takes to talking about killing his mother or these co-eds, it's unique to see on the screen.
And then the show is all about why these people do the things that they do. And the back and forth between the two main characters is phenomenal.
Yes.
Now, for those longtime listeners of the IMC podcast, what Shane took from this series is that there weren't serial killers before, say, the 1940s. I don't know if the show kind of landed in that same place.
No.
Brian and I laughed heartily and long at that suggestion. So I don't know.
She
maybe
really did think that. That's not true. Really?
Surely not. I mean, okay. We just don't know.
No, surely no. He really didn't think
there
that.
Have been serial killers. We laughed at it. We're right to do so.
Yeah.
Isn't The Devil in the White City about a serial killer from the 1800s?
Something around the World's Fair. I think Martin Scorsese's making that movie. Or he's been talking about it.
Did I believe Leonardo DiCaprio? Did he take the lead in that?
I think that is a thing that is happening. Yeah. Mindhunter, not a show that I've seen. It falls into that category of like shows I've heard good stuff about, but it's on Netflix and it's going to be on Netflix forever and I can just fire it up at any moment.
Yeah, but why wait? I mean,
I don't feel the urgency. I just don't feel the urgency. It doesn't like leap to the top of my list. I mean, I love David Fincher. I don't know the extent of his interaction and his influence on the show beyond just like directing maybe the pilot. Maybe he directed more than that. I don't know. But
here's why you need to watch it. What Blair says is the back and forth between the two FBI agents, Holden Ford and Bill. It's fantastic. That is the first reason. But you really need to watch it for the effort that the actors put in on these serial killers, particularly Cameron Britton. It's bizarre. And they're not making this up. This is they're using real material to really build these characters, because they're real people. So, I mean, it really lets you into who these people are. You're missing out by not watching.
I think in my head, I've lumped it into shows like Criminal Minds and like Law and Order, Criminal Intent, and that kind of stuff.
We talked about
Hannibal earlier in the show, and I kind of think Hannibal is like the final word on serial killer shows, even though I'm sure they have nothing to do with each other. Hannibal being incredibly over the top, and Greg Wignall and almost nonsensical in places.
Well, when you're talking about serial killers,
I think that's the take that Hannibal goes with. It makes serial killers into grand villains, which is just as unknowable as like banal, I murdered my mom and then I washed my hands and ate an omelet.
I will say that there's not like the torture porn kind of like there's no visual of any of that stuff, which I appreciate in the show, because I can't watch that stuff.
Sure.
And even like the opening, look, I skipped through the opening because it has like pictures of like interspersed in between other shots. They have like pictures of dead people, like a hand or something like that. I don't even like that. But the fact that they talk about it in the show, but they don't like, they're not gruesome in showing
it's
anything.
Clinical.
Yes. Is
well,
fine for me to watch.
Okay. Yes, I should give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they don't show you raping his mother's skull, but he talks.
All right.
Of course.
This is a family podcast. We talked about a teen boy fucking a pillow stuffed with soup in the most benign and wholesome ways possible.
Yes.
Let's just try and keep.
There was one thing that I added to the agenda, and I probably shouldn't, but I wanted to just mention about it. Ken Burns came out with a new a documentary called The Vietnam War. And it was – I'm a big fan of Ken Burns. Obviously, I love his baseball documentary more than all others. But with the way he is, he takes some sort of subject and just expands on it is pretty wonderful. And I just think that the Vietnam War, he really hammers on its beginnings, its ending, its controversy, how – veterans of that are coming around, and how we're coming and how we came around to them. It's such an interesting tale. It's long. It's 10 series. Well, 10 episodes in, but definitely worth checking out if you ever have the ability to do so and you have the patience. So that was one of my other favorite things about 2017 was the Ken Burns Vietnam War documentary.
I only caught the first three episodes before it went behind a paywall. If I had got through all of it, it would almost certainly be my favorite TV series of the year.
I had actually a parent buy that for me this year.
Oh, nice.
So I was able to utilize it in my classroom and show some of my seventh graders some scenes from it. As you know, it's got some pretty brutal scenes, so I can't show them a lot. The one scene, because it's really hard to speak to some of the emotion that these guys feel, especially when you're talking about middle schoolers. The one scene that really felt captured it really well was and I cannot remember the gentleman's name, but he was stationed stateside and had to report and deliver to families the news of their son or whoever being deceased. Mm-hmm. And he went ahead and he did that one time, and then he turned to his superior and said, send me to Vietnam. I can't do this anymore. The way he captures these stories, Ken Burns, I mean, he's a master at it.
Yeah, he gets the global grand thinking part of it from like the notes of Robert McNamara or Kennedy's diaries or whoever. And again, I only saw the first three episodes. And he contrasts it with the man on the ground who is experiencing the ramifications of these grand decisions. Right. And I also thought he very admirably split time with the Vietnamese. All factions of the Vietnamese.
Both
North Vietnamese themselves and the Viet Cong. I assume some Lao and Cambodian people get added in there too, because I mean, we're talking about millions of people that died.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's absurd. It is absolutely absurd.
I've mentioned the World War I book I'm reading, and it's just unfathomable the people that make these kind of decisions and continue to have careers after, instead of being publicly drawn and quartered. So that's the Vietnam War.
Sorry for
Handmaid's Tale. Speaking of people who shouldn't have careers and should be drawn and quartered. I loved The Handmaid's Tale. It was phenomenal.
Bringing it right back around. Yeah. Blair's quick capsule reviews. We could knock out the entire like 500 TV shows or something that aired in the last year in no time at all. Yep. So that's your project for 2018.
All right.
Watch 500 TV series and then tell us what you thought about them in like 3 second little bits.
That's skill.
That's what you got to look forward to. Blair's going to gain 300 pounds and her health, and she's not going to make it to 2019, but she's going to tell you all about some failed NBC sitcoms. So that's going to do us for 2017. We're going to shut the book on it. With this episode, if you'd like to hear what we thought about like a few dozen movies that came out in 2017, check out our previous couple episodes. We'll be following up this episode with more podcasts looking forward. For example, we'll be discussing Rome in a couple weeks, which is a series that was last on the air in 2008. We'll be recording a podcast shortly about our latest trio of movies. Again, looking forward those movies being Split, The Great Wall, and Megan Levy. We have decided on our next trio of theme is women in men's worlds, and we'll be talking about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, starring Tina Fey as like a military reporter in Afghanistan, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And then Silence of the Lambs, classic, speaking of serial killers. Mm-hmm. And Big Eyes, starring Amy Adams as a painter whose husband takes all the credit for her work. We'll be reviewing those movies in the coming weeks, as well as cranking out aforementioned Rome podcasts. And maybe it's time for some more What You Watching. And, you know, just whatever crosses our desks here at the Mediocre Movie Club. You can keep up with our doings at mediocremovie.club. You can like us on Facebook at Mediocre Movie Club. And you can follow us on Twitter at Mediocre Movical. Amazon links, iTunes reviews, all that great stuff helps us pay the bills, helps us reach more people. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Have a good night.